Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ancient Warfare Answers, or should I say Murray's Ancient Warfare Answers, because I'm on my own again. Here we are, doing your weekly fix of 10 minutes of intense ancient military history. I hope I can provide that this week. We're answering a question from one of our viewers or Patreons. You, of course, can ask a question, whether as a viewer or indeed you can become one of our patrons on patreon.com/ancient warfare podcast. There are three different levels of patron that you can be, any one of which can ask a question, and you can even get a copy of the magazine. Now, the question that I have today is, what are some documented cases where the victorious conquering forces held deep respect for their defeated foe or for the manner in which their foe fought, even though they were ultimately defeated? And it's a tricky one. In most cases, you've got the idea of enemies not despising one another, but certainly not being particularly enamored with them, shall we say. Having said that, there isn't a large amount of ancient accounts of hatred in the accounts in the ancient Egyptian warfare and even in scenes on Trajan's Column. Decapitating your enemy isn't necessarily a sign that you're disrespecting them. It's a sign, we have Egyptian reliefs where hands are cut off and heads are cut off. That's literally for a head count, probably where the phrase comes from. And so that's not disrespect necessarily. It's called a more sort of expedient rather than any kind of disrespect. We've got lots of accounts of that warfare is fought, especially in the Greek world, that warfare is fought, and then at the end of it, a truce is agreed with heralds, and you are allowed to recover your dead. And that's a very respectful end to combat, and very strict rituals are observed at the end of warfare. And we get notes in various battles where those rituals are not observed for whichever reason. And of course, in ancient Greek battle, the requesting of your own dead was a sort of tantamount to admitting you'd lost. And the other part of that, of course, is setting up a trophy. And we do have some battles where both sides set up a trophy. So we do get some accounts that show great respect, or indeed show disrespect. So for instance, at the Battle of Delium, which is 424 BC, fought between Athens and Thebes, old enemies, Athens and Thebes, dating back to the Persian Wars, where, of course, Thebes is the scapegoat for most of the Greek Medizing that is siding with the Persians during the Persian invasion of Greece. We normally have this picture of, the united Greeks fighting against the Persians. That's not true. The united Greeks essentially is Athens and the states of the Peloponnese, but not all the states of the Peloponnese. Anything north of Thermopylae or north of Corinth is, in fact, going to be a Medizing Greek state. But blame for all of that falls on Thebes. And in Herodotus' account of the Battle of Plataea, we get the mention of the Thebans facing the Athenians. And the Thebans are killed to a man by the Athenians. And so we also get some accounts of the Athenians only lost, I think it's 52 men and only from one tribe, which is interesting. But there, the deliberate annihilation of the Theban unit. And Thebes thereafter has a stained reputation as being the betrayers of all Greece, which is like, hang on a minute, 95% of Greek cities sided with the Persians, but the Thebans get like marked out for it, which is very unfair. So you get that kind of sort of ancestral hatred coming through. So at the Battle of Delium, the Thebans defeat the Athenians in 424 BC. And at the beginning of the battle, the Athenians have marched to Delium, which is just inside Boeotia, so just inside Theban territory. And they fortify a ruined temple of Apollo. And at the end of the battle, a herald from the Athenians says, "Let us collect our dead." And the Thebans reply, "Well, no, because you invaded our territory. You have despoiled and sullied a temple, you're the perpetrator of a religious crime. You won't get your dead back." And the Athenians are all up in arms about that. And indeed, we get that in the sources too, of, oh, how dare they break this, you know, traditional rule that's not done. But sort of the Thebans have their reasons for doing so. And so that's sort of one of those examples where you get that. In Roman warfare, you get stories of, in civil wars, for instance, you get, you know, stories of people who know one another, killing one another and sort of out of necessity, not being able to tell the difference between, you know, friend and foe and all those sorts of things. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of hatred. We do get the accounts, obviously, at the Battle of Thermopylae, of Leonidas getting decapitated by Xerxes, as a sort of frustration, really, rather than disrespect. I mean, it is disrespectful, but it's also a sign of how incredibly frustrated Xerxes was that he was delayed. And then it gets repeated on Mecisteus at the Battle of Plataea. He gets decapitated. And several other sort of acts of vengeance occur in Greek warfare thereafter between the Greeks and the Persians. And, of course, the Persians and the Greeks can use very old historical occurrences to justify later invasions, like Alexander the Great invading Persia and justifying it with as revenge for various different perpetrated crimes. So you get that. Now, the example of deep respect that I wanted to bring up, however, occurs at the Battle of Chaeronea. Now, Chaeronea is fascinating because, having just talked about the ancestral hatred between Athenians and Thebans, of course, at the Battle of Chaeronea, the Athenians and the Thebans join sides to fight the common foe of the Macedonians. Now, that's interesting in itself because you've got, it seems to be a very last-minute decision that the Thebans and the Athenians will join sides. At Athens in the 330s, even the 340s BC, you've had a faction within Athens who was pro-Macedonian and a faction who in Athens is anti-Macedonian, but not necessarily pro-Theban. But there are some who are saying we should join forces with Thebes, the strongest military force other than ourselves, because we're Athenians, in Greece, and we should defeat the enemy of Greece, which is Philip of Macedon. And so as Macedon and Philip begin their inexorable march southwards in terms of control through the Third Sacred War and so on, you get this sort of rising panic. And so in 338 BC, you get Thebes and Athens joining sides, and they fight the Battle of Chaeronea, which is one of the most important battles in the ancient world, one of those life world-changing in a day afternoons. And unfortunately, it's one of the least understood because our sources are really bad for that particular battle. But at that battle, what you have is the Athenians and the Thebans face the Macedonian phalanx, and they get defeated. The ins and outs of how that works are a bit tricky to work out, and my favorite version of the battle is not the one that you get in the major sources. I have a completely different view, but that's far longer than 10 minutes. But anyway, at the Battle of Chaeronea, the Theban sacred band, the 300 pairs of lovers who are their elite military unit, dating back to at least 378 BC, although the Thebans have elite 300 units going all the way back to the Battle of Plataea, and it's possible that they're a similar kind of organization all the way back to that period, and even earlier. We're not sure, but certainly from the 4th century, you've got the sacred band, and they are killed to a man by the Macedonians under Alexander. Now, the amazing thing, of course, is that the Lion of Chaeronea, the monument that still stands, when that was excavated in the early 20th century, 1901, I think, 256 skeletons were found there. So that seems to be the last stand, and the bodies of the sacred band were buried together. But in Plutarch's Life of Pelopidas, we've got an anecdote about the fact that when Philip of Macedon was shown was surveying the dead, he stops at the place where the 300 men, the 300 were lying, and where they had faced the long spears of his phalanx. And, you know, Plutarch describes it as, with their armor and mingled with one with another, he was amazed. And on learning that this was the sacred band of lovers and beloved, he burst into tears and said, "Perish miserably, they who think that these men did or suffered aught disgraceful." So there you've got Philip of Macedon crying over the fact that this elite military unit had been killed to a man by his son and his phalanx at the Battle of Chaeronea. Now, of course, that may be complicated by the fact that Philip had been a hostage in Thebes, and depending on who you follow, he may have come up with the idea for the Macedonian phalanx when he was at Thebes in the 370s. We've got two different stories. One, that he's at the house of Epaminondas, learning from the great Theban general how to be a general. Or the other, that he's at the house of Parmenes, another great Theban commander. So you've got this picture of Philip, the boogeyman, the bogeyman of Greece in the 340s and 330s BC, respecting the Thebans, who he's just annihilated, so much that he cries at the fact that he's eliminated them as an enemy. But that kind of respect is rare in ancient warfare. Normally, it's fight the fight, and then at the end of the battle, then you can be friends again at the end of the battle. But I hope that answers that question. We'll see you again next time. Thanks.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.